The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Appreciate you having back on. Doc, how you doing this morning? Welcome back to the show.
Doing great, and it's always a pleasure, as you know, 13th year for us weekly, and I appreciate it.
All right. When I was first trying to get you on, then we had a problem with the phone here, but what was your reaction emotionally to the Trump verdict? And I know you're looking at this also through the legal lens before we go on. We're going to do a little bit of history first, but I just wanted to get just your first quick take on that. We'll cover more on that later, right?
Oh, sure. Actually, myself and friends had different emotions. And for example, let's say my wife, Judy, was angry. Mm-hmm. She said, we're going to do something about this. I was sad. And the reason for it is that this was such an unreasonable a jury verdict. And the Soros buy-in was already going to manifest itself, and from a legal perspective, it was the fact that this warfare against Americans is continuing with the Biden-Soros connect-the-dots connection.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I've noticed that there have been more people in the legal world. In fact, I would even say in the legal world on MSNBC types and also CNN types, some that are not necessarily friendly to President Trump, who are concerned about the rule of law implications. That'd be a fair assessment of even where honest people from the left are finding themselves at this moment.
Well, that's only because of the fact is they're hedging their bets, in my estimation, my friend.
Oh.
And the reason is that when you take a look at what has happened with over 7 cases right now against Trump that are major cases, of which 4 are criminal.
Are you thinking that the New York City case is going to be used almost as the blueprint then, moving forward?
No, because they're individual ones
okay.
that are happening. You know, like the business records case is one that if you connect the dots very quickly, is that it goes all the way back to within a few months after Trump was first sworn into office, when the FBI, that had been really infected by Obama with the Justice Department, went ahead and arrested Michael Cohen 1 year after starting the investigation, just a few months in Trump's term. And then all of the different type of cases that have come up have been totally connected in terms of you have the dollars coming in from Soros. What did Soros do? Well, he put in the money so that Alvin Bragg could be elected.
And by the way, I wanted to ask you, how did Judge Marchand end up getting into the rotation there? Because people are – I read some legal analysis that's saying that there was no way that was just a random occurrence, and that there was almost a concern that he was selected to do exactly what ended up happening. What would you say to that?
It was part of the law is just not being followed. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really a banana republic. Because if you connect the dots, just in terms of the business records case, you have Soros connecting all the way in the beginning underneath Trump's term. Pelosi is bringing 2 different indictments, actually impeachment proceedings, to keep the whole situation and Trump in chaos. You have, once Biden gets in, 25 different meetings with the the son of the older Soros, who is meeting with Biden.
So you're thinking about this whole thing as being a politically directed, in fact, and we use this term a lot recently in our politics, predetermined outcome. Predetermined outcome, then?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, Alan Dershowitz, who I've always looked at as a very bright attorney, going back to when he was a professor and even on the O.J. Simpson's case, is a brilliant technician. And right from the beginning, he was saying that he was doubtful that in the business records case, with all the ones that are going on, that on that particular case, my friend, that the connection was already in, and he just said they had to get it out of New York, because New York is a far left bastion that's destroying everyone that's in their way.
Do you find it interesting, though, that some Democrats are thinking that they may have bitten off more than they can really afford to chew? And I'll bring this up with a story on Fox News about Dean Phillips. Dean Phillips is a state representative in the state of New York. And he said that Donald Trump is a serial liar, cheater, and philanderer, a six-time declarer of corporate bankruptcy, an instigator of insurrection. Yeah, right. And a convicted felon who thrives on portraying himself as a victim. Governor Kathy Hochul should pardon him for the good of the country. Isn't that an interesting statement coming from a Democrat? He's so horrible that we need to pardon him. In other words, he's killing them, right? Isn't that ultimately, in spite of how unjust this whole thing has been, it's killing the people who have brought this? Isn't there a case to be made for that? It's actually hurting them?
What's happening is that you're seeing all the rats in the darkness who are looking at the fact that they need to have independence. And this is not to the Republicans. Uh-huh. These are for the independents, that they feel that they need the vote. So they will do this hedging their bets, which is actually what Biden is doing. As he moves to the middle, that as soon as he is reelected, the next day, everything is going in from all of the FBI's shadowing parents. That's all going to go in. He's done it.
All right. And so don't believe all of this talk about he's going to tighten up on what they call it, asylum claims. He's going to do that this week, is what they're supposedly saying. This is just strictly for electoral purposes, election purposes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because why is he doing it now? Mm-hmm. Because of the fact he's going to the middle. And the thing is that it's easy to make talk about what you're going to do. And then with the election coming up so soon, let's take a look to see what happens. Nada. And they're brilliantly executed, and the country is on fire, and they're doing everything they can to keep their progressive far-left supporters in, because there's a fear of the Soroses and a fear of the ones that really do not care about this country. They don't, or else they wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law at Southern Oregon University. Is there anything good that came out of this whole situation at this point, you think?
Well, I didn't look at it, although I was sad at the fact that the law is disregarded. And there's this nice politically correct word called lawfare. Mm-hmm. But actually, with Nixon, it was called Watergate. And it's just the same PR, because at the same time that you have Merrick Garland, who I don't know if your listeners know this. Do you know he's worth $20 million?
I do now. Did not know he was that wealthy. It's amazing. Boy, in public service, huh? All these years?
Well, inherited is the PR that came out. Because if your listeners go ahead and just say, okay, outstanding lawsuits against Trump, whoa. And then go ahead and say, worth of Joe Biden's individual cabinet members. They're all multimillionaires. And then you go into the connections that are going on, because with the connections going through meetings with the White House, you have also, as soon as Soros says, I can get Bragg elected and I can go ahead and get Fannie Willis elected, then all of a sudden, now we go into the Biden administration, then Merrick is there saying, well, I know exactly what we can do, because what people didn't notice that in this business records case, my friend, a top prosecutor for the Department of Justice very silently left the Department of Justice to take the lead in the business records case in New York, which was a state proceeding. If you connect the dots, you'll see that people are not connecting the dots.
So the White House is connected to the Trump prosecution, whether they want to admit it or not, whether they will
absolutely.
Admit it.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I mean, for example, now, my friend, on the news, you have the Hyde and the Hunter Biden trial. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the first thing that's going to happen. It keeps it away from Trump. They'll have the negative PR releases that they have against Trump going out with the Post and the Times. At the same time, all the news feeds are running with the fact that we love our son. We're proud of him. He did not do anything wrong. This is what Biden is saying. They know what they're doing, and this country is asleep. And I would love to see the Republican Party walk the talk, as you did with the two Lindas and your listeners, to be able to safeguard until the next attack as to the county supervisorial, both for Josephine and Jackson case.
Oh, yeah, the attacks on the county. Yeah, we worked really hard on that.
Mm-hmm. They talk, but they don't walk the talk.
Mm. We appreciate your take on this, Dr. Powers. Is there, let me put it this way, is there any hope for the rule of law in the near future in this United States government? Is it so far gone that we're just in this, it kind of reminds me of the late Republic of Rome. I'm not a huge studier of Rome, but I imagine you did probably in college, in which the late era of the Republic had people essentially charging people who would leave office with crimes after they left the protection of the office, right? And this was something that was very common in the latter part of the Republic. Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah, and that's an excellent point, because you look at the rise and fall of civilizations, and yes, there's no question that the United States is not as strong now as far as freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
Once Obama got in and did his number,
well,
Biden has run with.
Yeah, well, if you don't mind me to interject, though, one of the things that made the United States special, we'd always talk about United States exceptionalism, right? You know, the exceptionalism of the United States. Part of what made us exceptional, though, was the legal system, the justice system, that everybody had a presumption of being innocent, and that we really didn't. It's not that it didn't happen that you didn't have politically operated prosecutions or oriented prosecutions, but it wasn't particularly common. And now it is getting more common. We're kind of like Berea from the Soviet Union: present the man or the woman, I guess, and then we'll present the crime, you know, with him or her. Right? I mean, that's where we are right now.
Yeah, because you see, when those practicing law, the fundamental concepts, and then you go into all the details, is that if the facts are against you, you argue the law. If the law is against you, you argue the facts. So these are all the things that are going on. What's happening, though, is that right now there's such pressure put on judges. Judges did pick up the fact that underneath Merrick Garland and Biden, on the abortion decision, which just said it's a state decision, and then all of a sudden what happened? You had demonstrations that were paid, and if you follow the money, you'll find out it's from far-left groups that were demonstrating at 2 o'clock in the morning, keeping the Supreme Court justices up.
Against the law, by the way, right?
And the thing, yes, against the law, but they went after, and that's why they're going after Alito now. Connect the dots. With Alito, he is going to be, they're looking at as a lead judge, having to do with this presidential immunity argument that the Trump attorneys have met in the insurrection, quote-unquote, insurrection case. And so that's on hold because they're waiting for the Supreme Court decision. But they look at the Chief Justice, who is really more concerned with his overall reputation.
In other words, he's a squish, right? In other words, John Roberts is a squish, arguably.
He's a squish.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, judges are regular people. They're bright. They're skilled in the law, but they also know how to get a judgeship. They got to align themselves with the right party.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way you do that is that you find ways of going ahead and supporting that party. We've seen that here. We've seen that all over the country, especially in New York, when Hillary Clinton got in there, and you saw the appointments that were coming through. So, my friend, what's happening here is that judges can even make decisions based on whether they had an argument with their wife. They're human. They're bright. I support them. But right now what's happened, it's been so politicized, that where are the courageous judges? Well, there was one who was a Trump appointment who in the Hunter Biden case said that, wait a minute, I have sentenced people who have done much less to jail term. And I can really find it difficult to go with this. Connect the dots, my friends. This is an infection that people have got to contribute to whom? Alliance Defending Freedom. They have taken another case representing Southern Oregon.
By the way, they're doing oral arguments on that today in Portland, I believe, is where they're going to be doing this for the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. You're talking about the Grants Pass School District 7 case, right?
Oh, there's several cases that if it wasn't for the Alliance Defending Freedom, it would be lights out. Mm-hmm. Southern Oregonians.
Yeah, well, there are some brave attorneys within that situation for sure here. What do you believe, though, is the path forward to get out of such a corrupt justice system, in your opinion here? Having worked for the law, having studied to defend the law, to use the law, and to be honest about the law, how do you reform something? Is it irreformable at this point, just a cycle, a political cycle? How would you see this here, Doc?
That's an excellent question, Bill. And I'm very deeply sympathetic to the number of people who listen with you and who are small business owners. As a matter of fact, students of mine are owning businesses that are advertising on KMED. And what gets me is the fact that they have to earn a living. They are raising their children. Mm-hmm. They are going ahead and doing this. How much time can they put in? You have taxpayers against then those that are very truly on a government far-left dole. Let me tell you the last decision that just came out today that I was able to find, and that's the fact that the Ninth Court of Appeals has done it again. They have centered on Oregon. They've said you must release all defendants that have not had legal counsel and are in jail for past 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in other words, you either fix the public defender situation or you have to cut them loose, right?
So what they do is they cut them loose. And that just came down. I just got the news today. And guess who brought it?
Who?
Federal public defender who is paid through the Biden administration. But guess who appointed this federal public defender, my friend?
I hate to ask. Who appointed it?
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that just made the 2-1 decision.
Hmm.
So what's happening is that all of us have got to, to the extent we have time, stand up, but you can't do it because if you're running your business, you're not going to take political sides.
Yeah, no, I get that. So, I get that. I guess the point being, though, is that I'm almost hearing kind of both sides being argued at the same time here, Doc. I'm just concerned because is it reformable or, is it too dangerous to stand up at the moment? How do you see it from an attorney's point of view, as someone who has observed what's going on?
Well, it's going to be an individual case decision that comes in. I'm not evading the question.
Okay.
I'm just saying that there are individual judges, like the one who stood up on the Hunter Biden case that was a deal that was a slap on the wrist, and that was it. And now he's having a trial. The decisions made by the Justice Department and by getting Mershon in, along with the business records case, is one that where Dershowitz is absolutely great. I heard him at Harvard Law School when I would go over when I was there, but not at the law school. I would walk over just to see how they were teaching because I was immensely curious. And Dershowitz was very bright. And the thing I'll always remember was in his constitutional law class that I would not sit in, but I had a lot of things I had to do. He would go ahead and say, give me the arguments that you're saying the Constitution does not apply or that it never covered it because you're going to be a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're marching out of Harvard Law School, Yale Law School, and all these other ones, and we're seeing what happens in terms of the anti-Israel sentiments because it's gone too far to where even for Harvard University, they were public pressure, as you know so well, had to get them to let their president go, who was a DEI supporter and was totally, if you think that Harvard is liberal, was totally charging it to where you wouldn't even look at the classes. You wouldn't even understand the classes that were going ahead and graduating to go and march into making decisions as judges.
But still, any hope on reforming in the near future?
Only if Americans stand up, and I am not advocating violence at all, because the FBI, I'm sure, is monitoring a lot of conversations, as they did. As they did, faith-based.
Okay. Well, all right. We'll set that aside at the moment here, Doc. Before we take off, and we'll revisit history next week, okay? We'll do that next week.
That's perfectly fine. But to your listeners, my friends, don't dismay. Do what you can. Keep your parenting going as you're doing, and the business that you're doing. Listen to Bill. Uh-huh. And when you have the time that you're not going to lose your business from, stand up.
Okay. Here is where this is the final Trump question I'm going to ask here about this trial. He is going to be sentenced. He's going to be sentenced, two, 3 days before the Republican convention this year, okay? What are the odds, if you're a betting man here, or what is your, it's difficult because so many rules have been broken in this particular trial. You've talked about that, okay? Do you think that he sees jail time out of this?
Well, the pundits are arguing, my friend, that there will be no jail time because the damage has already been done, because of the fact that by the time an appeal is heard, it will be after the election is over.
Right.
But Dershowitz is the one that your listeners should follow, because it is balanced. And Dershowitz is saying, if he had to give any information and advice to Trump's attorneys, is go ahead and fight for sentencing now. Don't wait.
Oh.
Then what you do, well, absolutely. Why wait? Because the delays are going to just be delayed to where they're going to be hitting you all the way through until the election. So why not go ahead and make the quick thing, say that you need an appeal?
But you can't do an appeal until you get the sentencing, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so Trump's lawyer needs to fight for sentencing now so you can get the appeal, and you get that off the table in the electoral process. Got it.
Then, my friend, you go to the next step, which is the fact that the appeal from Manhattan is going to be delayed. So you go in and say, okay, you're delaying, and go directly to the New York Court of Appeals and forget the Manhattan appeal. This is what happens all the time in the law.
Mm-hmm.
There's a judging that you have to make. Then, my friend, try to get to the Supreme Court, because the whole thing is that they are sitting back to where now Biden is going to go like his peace overtures in terms of Israel with Hamas. BS. It's great publicity and PR that comes out from the New York Times. See if they walk the talk. And by then, the election will be over.
All right. Well, that's an interesting strategy, though. That's an interesting strategy, Doc. Fight for sentencing right now rather than in July. Get it over with sooner so that way you can get the appeals started and so you're able to more or less block it legally. I appreciate that so much, all right? And I haven't heard that really talked much about before. But thank you. You take care, okay? Thank you, Doctor.
Take care of yourself and all the best. And thank you again for the stand-up you did in our local elections.
Yep. Always proud to do so. And I'm just glad that after all that work, we're able to make it happen, too. Thanks, Doc. We'll talk soon, all right?
Okay. Have a good one.
Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law at Southern Oregon University. It is 8:38. After news, which is coming up next here, we're going to have the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Diner 62 Real American Quiz, of course, is where we give you a $20 gift certificate for answering some great historical question. And it's a great story from 1956 that we have for you, all right? By the way, on special right now at Diner 62, it's a half ham special, $10.95 Monday through Friday. They give you a half slice of ham, and it's that really thick, you know, breakfast steak-like ham. It's really, really good, along with the taties and the scrambled eggs and everything else. I think you'll really enjoy that. Also, Diner 62, your lunch destination with juicy third-pound burgers and so much more. 770-5633-770-KMED. And right after news, we'll do this, okay? All right.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable...
Diner 62 quiz now.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going to rock around the clock, except in Santa Cruz. Yeah, let's talk about the Diner 62 quiz here right now. And by the way, try a crispy chicken sandwich at Diner 62. They've had grilled chicken sandwiches before, but now they have the crispy, which is very, very good. And by the way, we still have an open line there if you wanted to jump in for the quiz, 770-5633. Renee is on here first. Hello, Renee. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thank you.
All right. Well, I don't know if you realize today, but in history, June 3rd, 1956, rock and roll was banned in Santa Cruz. Were you aware of that?
No.
Yes, it was. Santa Cruz, California, a favorite early haunt of author Ken Kesey and his Merry Pranksters, established capital of the West Coast counterculture by the mid-60s, yet 10 years earlier, the balance of power in the beach town leaned heavily towards the older side of the generation gap. And what happened in 1956, June 3rd, city authorities announced a total ban of rock and roll at public gatherings. And they called the music detrimental to both the health and morals of our youth and community. Now, it was a dance party the previous night that had led to this reaction. Just 2 weeks later, in its June 1956 issue, Time magazine reported on similar bans recently enacted in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and in San Antonio, Texas, where their city council's fears of undesirable elements echo the concerns of Santa Cruz. So the question this morning, Renee, how long did the ban on rock and roll in Santa Cruz last? What say you? Was it A, 3 hours, B, 3 days, C, 3 weeks, D, 3 months, or was it E, 33 months? There's a three in there somewhere. Okay, what do you say?
I'm going to say A.
You're going to say A, 3 hours. So the ban was 3 hours. Oh, I'm sorry. It was longer than 3 hours. Okay. Let me go to Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
Just fine. Thank you.
All right. We're talking about the ban on rock and roll, June 3rd in Santa Cruz, California, June 3rd, 1956. 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, or 33 months? How long did they ban rock and roll?
How about 3 weeks?
3 weeks? No, it wasn't 3 weeks. Try again. Open line 770-5633. So it's not 3 weeks, not 3 hours. So let me go to line three. Hi there. Who's this? Good morning.
This is Joanne.
Joanne, we're talking about rock and roll being banned in Santa Cruz, 1956 on this date. Was it 3 days, 3 months, or 33 months? How long did they manage to ban rock and roll in that town?
33 months.
33 months. Boy, that would have been... No, it wasn't that long. It wasn't that long. We're getting pretty close. Let me go to line four. Hi there. Who's this?
This is Renee again.
Oh, Renee, you made through. Good. Sometimes it happens. Yeah. All right. So we're talking about 3 days or 3 months?
How about 3 days?
3 days. Hey, this doesn't happen very often, but yeah.
You're a winner!
You made it back through, and you won. All right? Now, it only took a few days for the story to go viral back in the 1950s. It was a different style, though, right? The wire services ended up picking up the tale. What you got there?
I have dogs.
No kidding.
I don't know. Somebody's talking across the street or something.
Don't they know you're winning a contest here? But let me share this with the rest of the folks, though. The backlash hit the city hard. Officials immediately started clarifying the ban. On June 6th, City Manager Robert Klein in Santa Cruz announced there was no official city ban on harmless rock and roll dancing. And says, we have nothing against rock and roll music, the police chief added. It's just what some people do while listening to it. And the backtrack led to an incredible San Francisco Chronicle article that read, city officials, indignant over being thought of as squares, announced today that dancing to rock and roll music is not being banned from the resort community. So there we go. And Renee, you're going to Diner 62 just for, being the last person standing, okay?
Santa Cruz when I was younger.
What was that now about Santa Cruz?
Been there many times. Oh. I grew up in the Bay.
I'll bet, yeah. I have a feeling it probably had more to do with tourism than just about anything else. Didn't want the news. Could be. But anyway, hang on. We'll get you set up with Diner 62. 846, open phones continue for the rest of this show. 770-5633. Anything on your mind, we can kick it all up. Coming up next. It's 848.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath. Long about a Saturday night.
Yeah. Hey, that could have come from 99.3's daytime format now. Except for the morning show, yeah. The jukebox, which is what we have there now. Hey, Wild Sam and Steve, Splish Splash had an interesting connotation on this banning of rock and roll. And that story we had
People were all upset because they were talking about somebody taking a bath. It was immoral.
Immoral taking a bath, getting clean, right? I guess the whole idea is you were naked, right? That kind of thing.
And it just wasn't something that was talked about in polite society. And then Elvis came along and he wiggled his hips, and that really upset people. And then the Beatles came along and they had long hair. We had I went to Crater High School. There was a guy named Gary Price that had a band there, and they got wigs and suits and stuff, and they played some Beatles stuff, and it was pretty cool. Well, Gary wore his wig to school the next Monday, and they kicked him out of school.
Oh, they did, huh?
Was like 1964.
Yeah, well, I remember even as a boy in elementary school in the late 1960s, there were dress codes as for, your hair could not touch the collar. It had to be just above the collar, if I recall. Isn't that about right?
Well, things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now it's only about, all right, don't have too many rips in your jeans so that we see your private parts. I think that's where the
I'm so amazed. If I would have ripped my jeans that came from Sears and Roebuck, I would have got a paddling, you know?
Oh, I know. Now were the Sears and Roebuck jeans, I'm trying to think because I was always a heavy kid.
Oh, yeah.
I was always a heavy kid. Was it Tough Skins or was it Huskies? Was it Huskies?
Well, I think Tough Skins, but this was before. I'm older. I'm 10 years older than you are, maybe a little more.
Uh-huh.
And they were kind of straight-cut, baggy pants. And in school, the thing was you had Levi's. And back in the 50s, you had them extra long so you could make a cuff about 2 inches and roll them up.
Yeah, I think they call that pegging, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the memory there, but I kind of forgot about the Splish Splash issue, all right? Thanks for the call there, Wild Salmon. Let me go to line two. Hi, KMED and KBXG. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Phil. This is Scott from Grants Pass.
Hey, Scott, what's going on with you today, huh?
Well, I was listening to talking to Dr. Powers there, and I find it interesting that everybody is having their speech controlled. Even he had his speech controlled. So I would say that the FBI is having their effect because you have to say, well, I'm not pushing for violence. And I think back in the early parts of our country there before the revolution, these guys were meeting out in the street and talking, and nobody was coming along over their shoulder and arresting them for saying something they didn't like. So I would guess that they're having their effect. So,
well, people are self-censoring, I think, is what's going on.
Yes, right. That's their goal.
Well, the only thing I will remind, and the reason I ask people about these kind of questions all the time here, Scott, is that freedom and liberty is never granted. It's never granted. And it always has to be taken in one form or the other. And do you believe that today's United States residents overall are willing to actually take back their liberty?
I have questions about that. Every once in a while I talk to somebody that they're ready to stand. But generally speaking, at the fair this last week, talking to people, I get the idea that you look around and people just think everything is normal. They don't understand there's over 200,000 Chinese military special forces here, and they're still coming in. And what's that about? I mean, obviously the government's bringing them in, so something's going to happen at some point, but people just are not aware. They think everything is normal.
Well, there is... It is the illusion of, the normalcy bias. We've talked about that before, right? The normalcy bias in which people just always assume that. And this is where I think people are a bit deluded. I talked with Phil, wrote me from Shady Cove over the weekend, and he was wondering, why aren't more people standing up on these kind of things? And one of the responses I gave him, and what would you think about this response? I said, one challenge is that people are still under the delusion that the next election is going to fix it all, and that's all that really matters. What do you think about that?
Well, when I listen to media, and I'm not talking about mainstream, I'm mm-hmm. listening to alternative, so forth, there's even a lack of conversation about the last fraudulent election that happened.
Right.
And then that story you had this morning, those people calling and talking about there in Colorado, nothing has changed. There was a gentleman that came through town here a number of months ago, last year.
I think it was Dr. Frank you're talking about, right? Dr. Frank?
Yeah, I think so. The guy mm-hmm. that was talking about how he's owned by all these different counties. And he expects to see a big change. But I'm still wondering if that is really going to happen. Mm-hmm. Our government here didn't do anything different. And I send them information all the time here in the county. And so I'm really having a everybody wants to vote for Trump, but it matters who counts the votes, not who votes.
All right. Appreciate the call, Scott, and I appreciate your concern.
All right, thank you.
And like I said, there is still, and I know we're conditioned a lot to, all you have to do is listen to Sean Hannity in the afternoon, 197,000 days until the next election, as if, has it changed? I don't know. Hi, KMED and KBXG. Who's this? Good morning.
Good morning. This is Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a quote from Goering during the Nuremberg trial.
Oh, I know which quote you're talking about. Yeah, the one about leading the people.
There are always those who know how to control the minds of men. The people can always be brought to bidding of the leaders, and it's easy. All you have to do is tell them that they are
under attack. I think it's under attack, or
that they are under attack, and then denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works every time in any country.
It's starting to rhyme a little bit here, isn't it? Appreciate your call. Let me grab another call or two before we turn into a pumpkin, all right? Hi, who's this? Good morning.
This is John.
John, what's up?
I would just say voting for Trump is not going to do enough. We need to start bearing our arms. Thank you.
All right, thank you, John. And line two, hi, KMED, KBXG.
Bill.
Yes.
The legal, Jerry the Bull.
Hey, Jerry the Bull. Welcome.
The legal voting age in Oregon, as I understand it, is 16 years old.
That's when you're registered. I don't think you're supposed to be voting, but you have to wonder, huh?
Okay, well, so I could be wrong on that. I did. My son did register. He's 18. But anyway, we just had some graduations. There's going to be more. I'm going to sign some people up to vote because you know what? There's some people out there who are very conservative, and they're not even registered.
Are you serious?
I swear to God. I just have a couple examples, Bill, and one's from a friend who told me that, and one's from my own experience. So, you know what? It doesn't take much to at least encourage people to vote and to register to vote if they're not registered.
And the other thing is that I also think it's also important that you have enough of a turnout to overcome the potential cheat if there is someone going to be doing some bad acting this time around. And I think there's very little evidence, given that so little was done after 2020, that much has been changed at that point. If anything, they've relaxed it in some places, okay? Thanks for the call there, Jerry, and I always appreciate it. The email, bill@billmeyershow.com. We'll talk more. It'll be Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. A lot of time for open phones. It'll be fun.